Next we're going to do 54 goddess mantras. For everybody involved, which means the whole world in the current crisis. And and especially to our friend Jessica, who's tested positive today, I heard. So the mantra is Om Aim Rim Klim Krim Shrim Dum Parashakti Namaha. These are all bij mantras of the goddess, names of the goddess, the different aspects of the goddess, all summed up by the final name Parashakti, Supreme Shakti, the Supreme Goddess, who includes all the other goddesses. So we want to ask for the goddess's mercy and protection in this time of strife. So let's do that. We begin with Gajanana, and then we'll do 54 of the mantras. We can do this half of the whole and this half of the whole.
Oh,
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to tonight's program. I always like to begin by remembering and quoting my guru, Baba Muktananda, who began every program by saying in Hindi, Sabko barisan mane kesat prem se hardik swagat. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he would always say, the essence of spirituality is to welcome another person with love. So I want to welcome you all. And I found that by putting a twist of lemon in my disinfectant, it's quite palatable. It goes down nice.
They might not know what you're talking about.
I've been reading bits from Baba's well-known talk called The Play of Sun and Shadow. It's so inspiring, so uplifting. So here are a couple more. He says, this is a person who is in touch with the self, he's describing. He says, he naturally takes delight in the game. With great bliss, he swims in the sweet current of love. He lives in a natural way, because they call that state the sahaja state, the natural state. Which I always loved. I always loved that term, that it was natural. It's not an unnatural state achieved by heroic methods, but it's the natural state when you get rid of all the unnaturalness in us. What you're left with is our natural state. It's really who we are. Makes it sound much more attainable and simple. He lives in a natural way. His is a perfect life in which there's no basis for worry, no reason to be brave, no desire for a support, no binding limitation, no friend to be attached to, no foe to hate. All that remains for him everywhere is the infinite flame of the self. In him, the knowledge of the play of ignorance and the understanding of the great Bhairava, Shiva, are born. Everything emerges from Bhairava, the conscious self. To know this is to attain the ever-scintillating knowledge of Bhairava. That's all I was going to do tonight, but I'm sort of hooked. So I'll do another bit. You ready? When you recognize the self within, an inner smile blossoms, and the peacock of your mind dances in the fountain of the love of life. You realize that life depends on love, and the strings of the veena of your heart are strummed. Then you travel your life journey very easily with great joy, as a guest, as a sightseer, as a witness. For you there is no burden, there is no weeping, there is no boredom. Imagine if you could live life like that, with only joy and no burden, no boredom. Instead, you sing and dance lightheartedly with great simplicity. You find consciousness, the center of the universe within you. This untouched consciousness is the formless witness, the indestructible joy. It is a drop of nectar. It is the inner heart. It is the shimmering, clear, and beautiful blue light. It is the bliss of the self, which arises independently within. It is the inner pulsation. Which path will lead you to that state? From what viewpoint can you see it? Look at your life. Look at the inner effulgence. There you go. So tonight, I think we get some instruction on how to attain that state. But first I should mention, the results of the poll are in from Radio Land.
Remind them of what the poll was.
The poll was, what was the poll? No. What was the would be the program for next week between Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj and Sri Ramana the Maharishi, the Maharshi. Two great beings in the Gyan or wisdom tradition, the Vedantic tradition. Who do you think won that poll? Well, very close, but Nisargadatta nipped Sri Ramana in the bud at the tape. He nipped him very close, just by a few votes. And it makes sense because Sri Nisargadatta was much more feisty, and Sri Ramana is very non-competitive, so he wouldn't have been upset, but Nisargadatta would have been very upset if he lost. So next week we'll hear from Sri Nisargadatta. And tonight, I have forgot to welcome everybody watching out in Radio Land, listening. They should be listening in Radio Land. And so, let me welcome you in New York, and in Ann Arbor, and in Illinois, and in Detroit. And some of you I saw the other day on one of our Zoom fests. And in the UK, and in Taiwan, and in Canada, and in Serbia, Germany, in Japan, and all over Australia, in Adelaide, several places in Adelaide, hi to you, and in Queensland, hi to you in Queensland, New South Wales, and Canberra, and all around Melbourne, and loads of people right here in the Mornington Peninsula. And nice to see you all. It was nice to see Vani, who's very close to the ashram, but can't come here. It was very good to see you, because we miss you also. So tonight, we're going to hear from the first teacher that I engaged with. I read his works, and how ironic life is, because I remember a friend of mine said they were looking at the works of Gurdjieff, and I made all kinds of jokes. I said, "Is that Hank Gurdjieff?" and things like that. And I thought, how absurd. Who is Gurdjieff? If it wasn't in the great Western tradition of intellectuals, I wasn't interested. A couple of years later, I was fascinated by him. So, do we have... this is... Gurdjieff as a young man, very magnetic, shall we say, and charismatic. And he was born in the Middle East and grew up in Eastern Turkey. His father was Greek, his mother was Armenian. Eventually, he went to the East to study, apparently studied with some Sufi masters there. And then around the time of the First World War, he started collecting students in Russia, and then traveled through there right during the revolution and emerged in Europe. Eventually, he set up an ashram or institute in France, Fontainebleau, and then visited America a couple of times, and was quite charismatic throughout his life. Very interesting teaching. So this is him as a young man. What else do we have? And this is a much older man. And one of his major disciples, Gurdjieff himself wrote some books, but they're not very, what's the word, accessible. But his close student, Uspensky, who was a Russian intellectual, Uspensky was a philosopher and mathematician, and he got interested in the quest for higher knowledge. He's very solid, as you can see. But he wrote a great book on Gurdjieff called In Search of the Miraculous. He was in search of the miraculous. Was there anything beyond this mundane physical plane. And so, and he went to the East also looking for it, couldn't find it, came back to Russia and was introduced to Gurdjieff. And he became his student. And eventually studied with him for quite some time, and then later went out and became a teacher in his own right. So, what else do I want to tell you about Gurdjieff? Anything else I should say about him? I'll give you a summary of his basic teachings. Now remember, this is in a context where, you see, now we're in a context where many yogis from the East have come to the West. And there was a tremendous awakening of interest in the inner path and yoga and inner life, both from Hindu and Buddhist sources. And people have learned about the mystical side of other religions as well. And meditation has swept the West, and Hatha Yoga and yogic philosophy and so on. But back in the 20s, when Gurdjieff first went to America, there was no context whatsoever. So he was quite a hit with the intellectuals in New York. Some of the famous thinkers and artists at the time went out to hear him. His basic teaching was that in our present state, his quote is, man is a machine. It means that we're purely mechanical. We do everything based on our upbringing and our early training, and we're kind of like pawns. We think we're free, but we're not really free. However, by doing what he calls the work, we would call sadhana, spiritual practice, meditation, we can develop freedom. We can develop the ability to choose and to get beyond our conditioning. And he would say, the work begins first with self-observation. We have to see how we are. We have to see our mechanicalness. Once we see it, then we can move on to higher levels and get rid of the mechanicalness. The second part of his sadhana was self-remembering, which is similar to mantra repetition or meditation on the I am. and by doing that, we develop, he would say, certain inner chemicals. And then we develop a coherent inner beingness. And he also talked about his path as the fourth way. There's the way of the fakir, which is physical yoga, the way of the monk, this is in his terms, which is the devotional yoga, bhakti yoga, and the way of the yogi is the way of the jnani, or intellectual yoga. And the fourth way he called the way of the sly man. I always found that very charming. The sly man does not have to wear robes and go to the Himalayas and go to a cave. The sly man operates in the midst of life, and he may be wearing a three-piece suit or business suit and look like anybody else, but inside he's on fire with transformation and with yoga and self-remembering and so on. So that's why he calls it the sly man. And he uses the sly man or woman, uses the circumstances of the life they find themselves in. Now we find ourselves in a very odd circumstance, don't we? Everybody around the world, very odd circumstance. So instead of bewailing these circumstances and wishing they were different, we'd find a way to move with them, cope with it, and find the nectar at the center of it. Then we become like Baba describes, one who sips the nectar of life. When we wrestle and fight against what then we just create tension and we create separation. So he would say that the work consists of waking ourselves up and building our consciousness and of leaks of energy, which you're going to hear about in a minute, and eventually we build a center of gravity or a permanent self. Of course, we know that the self is permanent, but because of our personality, we move from different states of being, anger, fear, sorrow, happiness, joy, then lack. See, and we move back and forth. We don't have a center of being. And so through meditation, yoga, we develop that center of gravity. They call it stitta prajna in the East, or steady wisdom. And then you become one thing, not a million things. Because he pointed out that we're very different. We're a different person when we're angry, a different person when we're fearful, and a different person when we're calm. So these are some of the teachings of Gurdjieff as seen through the eyes of Uspensky in a book that he did called The Fourth Way, The Way of the Sly Man. These are question answers with his students based on the Gurdjieff teachings. So the question, can energy be stored? Because he always spoke about spiritual energy. We talk about spiritual energy too. And I think people who practice this path are very aware of the energy. Once the kundalini energy is awakened, we know when we're filled with that divine elixir. And sometimes when we get shaktipat, we feel flooded with it, tremendously uplifted with it, by it. And we feel like in a divine state. But then a funny thing happens. We lose it. And why do we lose it? What happens? We have to learn the mechanism of why we lose it. We have to learn what makes us lose it. He calls it a leak. We have leaks. We leak this energy. So Uspensky says, yes, energy can be stored when you're able to store it. But at first, the question is not about storing, but about not wasting. We would have enough energy for everything we want to do if we did not waste it on unnecessary things. There are many ways that energy can be leaked, but the worst of all is expressing negative emotions. And that's what the theme of tonight is, expressing negative emotions. This is a profoundly interesting and profoundly rewarding understanding. And it's very important to struggle with the expression of negative emotions. Uspensky says, if you can stop the expression of negative emotions, you will save energy and never feel the lack of it. We can only hope to become conscious beings if we use in the right way the energy that is now used in the wrong way. So he's saying we don't need more energy, we have plenty of energy. As we just waste it through negative states, anger, fear, and sadness, and so on, jealousy, and we waste the energy that we have through these negative states. Shaivism says something similar. My favorite quotation, I am Shakti Daridra Samsari Uchite. He is a bound soul who has poverty of Shakti, who's lacking energy. And elsewhere in Spandakarikas, it says that depression is like a thief that comes and steals all your wealth from you, takes all your energy away. So in other words, your negative emotions are like thieves that you let into your house and they steal everything from you. This is what he's talking about as a leak. So he says, the machine can produce enough energy, but you can waste it on being angry or irritated or something like that, and then very little remains. The normal organism produces quite enough energy, not only for all the centers, but also for storing, so for all the work that you need to do in life. Production is all right, but expenditure is wrong. Reducing it to kind of economics. Production is good, but we're spending too much. These leaks have to be studied, because with some kinds of leaks, it's not worth going on until they're stopped. For the more one accumulates energy, the more will leak out. That's very interesting also. Said, you know, you can't just keep getting more and more energy, because you'll just leak it some more. So you have to study the ways you leak energy. And every one of us has to do this for themselves. We can listen to what the wise tell us. The wise say that every time you have a tantrum, you're losing energy. Every time you give way to paranoia or fear, you lose energy. Every time you get attached to something, you lose energy. Every time you get into an aversion, a hatred, you lose energy. And you have to look and see that these are absolutely true. I can say that in my own experience, I've seen that every one of those statements is completely true, that whenever I get caught in one of those states, I become depleted of energy. So he says, we have to learn that, not just acquire energy, that's part of it, but it's also not to leak it. He says it would be like pouring water into a sieve. If you just pour it, it just leaks out. Certain negative emotions produce precisely such leaks. In certain situations, some people go through a whole range of negative emotions so habitual they do not even notice them. It's true that when we don't examine ourselves, we don't start to know ourselves, we can manifest all kinds of negative movements that are bad for us without even knowing that we're doing that. And they're very mature and accomplished people who do these things without understanding it. That's why they become addicted to alcohol and other kinds of things. It may occupy only 5 minutes or 5 seconds, but it may be sufficient to spend all the energy their organism produced for 24 hours. I want particularly to draw your attention to this idea of negative emotion and the state of negative emotion. It's necessary to realize that there's not a single useful negative emotion useful in any sense. What? Not a single. My anger, yes, it's useful. People cultivate anger. They think it's appropriate, you know, and so on. How about jealousy? My jealousy is beautiful. Negative emotions are all a sign of weakness. I remember when I first read that, that really struck me. I wanted to say, what are you talking about? But what? They're all a sign of weakness. Next, we must realize that we can struggle with them. They can be conquered and destroyed because there's no real center for them. If they had a real center, like the instinctive emotions, there'd be no chance. We would remain forever in the power of negative emotions. And say they're not real. If they were real, we'd be really in trouble, because then the anger center would come up and we'd always be in that state. He said, they're not real. He says, it's lucky for us they have no real center. It's an artificial center that works, and this artificial center can be abolished. We call that the ego, that artificial center. When this is done, we'll feel much better for it. Even the realization that it is possible is very much to understand that. But we have many convictions, prejudices, and even principles about negative emotions, so it's very difficult to get rid of the idea that they are necessary. I'm saying, really believe that your anger is not necessary. It's not your friend. We spoil our life by negative emotions for which nature has not even provided a center, so that we must make one artificially. It means like anger becomes our center. There are certain people who anger is their center of their life. They live from the point of view of anger. But it's not a real center. It's a phony center. Or fear. Some people live in fear all the time, and so that fear becomes their center. Or depression, or self-pity. Some people live in a state of self-pity, or some people live in the state of lack, or not being, not getting enough, somehow always missing out. That's a false center they build, but they live their life like that the whole way. Question. But it seems to me there are circumstances that simply induce one to have negative emotions. And this is an important answer here. He says, this is one of the worst illusions that we have. We think that negative emotions are produced by circumstances, whereas all negative emotions are in us, inside us. This is a very important point. We also always think our negative emotions are produced by the fault of other people or by the fault of circumstances. Now, admit it, every one of us thinks that. And we blame circumstances and other people for the negative emotions. And what he's saying is, no, we do it to ourselves. We always think that our negative emotions are in ourselves and are produced by ourselves. That's the truth, that we do it. There is absolutely not a single unavoidable reason why somebody else's action or some circumstance should produce a negative emotion in me. It is only my weakness. If you could just memorize that sentence. There is absolutely not a single reason, unavoidable reason, why somebody else's action or some circumstance should produce a negative emotion in me. It is only my weakness. We've let that happen. But I've had a hard life and this happened to me and these people. Okay, it may be true. But we've let that happen to us. We've let ourselves be caught in that. No negative emotion can be produced by external causes if we do not want it. Another way of thinking about this, I used to think, what would Baba do if he was faced with that? Or what would Bhagwan Nityananda do faced with that? And they would sail through it. They wouldn't take it on. We have negative emotions because we permit them, justify them, explain them by external causes, and in this way we do not struggle with them. So he's saying, instead of saying, oh, that person did this, we should struggle with it inside of ourselves till we overcome it. That's a different choice we make there. It's all about making the right choice. We begin, he says, that as mechanical, we can't have choice. We become aware that we're like that. We start to study it, and we develop an ability to possibly choose, and then we actually choose in the right direction. Then we can start to hold energy and uplift ourselves and know the self. Question, since negative emotions are so destructive, why do we keep them? Spencer says, habit. Isn't that interesting? We are too accustomed to them. What would many people do without negative emotions? Some people spend their whole life having tantrums. This habit is so strong that special work is necessary to get rid of them. In the beginning, work on negative emotions is twofold, studying them and trying not to express them. Real work on negative emotions comes later. You cannot study them if you express them. If you try to stop expressing them, then you can see and study them. Also a very interesting point. If you give way and just have it to every, you know, if you get angry, you just let it out, you can't study it. But if you fight with it and decide not to, then it becomes intense and you have to study it. And you see what it does to you and how hard that is. Question, when you feel an unpleasant emotion, why is it necessary not to express it? Answer, it's the same as in relation to unnecessary talk. Ask yourself, is it useful? Is it necessary to express them? The idea is to create resistance, otherwise we can't observe. He says, why is it that it gives a feeling of relief to express anger or irritation? We really believe that. I felt, you know, I really wanted to dump that. And he answers, there's a worm in you that wants to express itself.
Then when it expresses itself, you feel relief. But in this way, it becomes stronger and has more and more control over you. So it's like a temporary relief of dumping your anger. But you create this habit, and it gets more and more control of you. When you realize that nobody else is responsible for your irritation, little by little, you'll begin to feel differently. I am Shiva. No one can shake me from my Shiva nature unless I agree to it. This is the great teaching. How noble and wonderful. Every one of us is a divine being. Whenever we allow ourselves to be shaken from that, we must be complicit. We are complicit. Every time we point our fingers and blame others, we become complicit. He says, we have much more power over expression of negative emotions than we think, and we can learn not to express them. Even in ordinary life, we do not always express negative emotions. In certain conditions, we know that it would be dangerous. You don't say certain things to somebody who's very powerful or something. And also, you know, the rules of conventional manners, politeness, courtesy. Isn't that where isn't that mean to have good manners means you don't act out everything, have every tantrum, and you're at a dinner party with the Duchess of Kent, and you don't have a tantrum. Oh, my cup is chipped. You know, you contain that because you're courteous. So these are directed against the expression of negative emotions. However, usually when we enter a relationship, this is the opposite side. When you become intimate with someone, familiar, then you let go all the politeness. You're not polite with your partner, and you let that rip. You let all your negative emotions out of your partner. They see the worst in you. And you shouldn't do that either. That hurts the relationship. So he says, I never said suppress. I said do not express. Find reasons for not expressing. It's important. It's not squashing it down. That's what people think. Not suppression. Suppression can never help, because sooner or later, the negative emotion will jump out. If you merely suppress, you keep the identification and only shut off the external expression. So you're still seething in that anger, but you don't talk to yourself and decide that anger is no good for me and there's no reason to be angry, and you know, and you try to get the right understanding. It's a question of finding reasons, of thinking rightly, because expression of negative emotion is always based on some kind of wrong thinking. Wrong thinking. And finally, this question. Could you summarize your teaching about negative emotions? And he says, okay, first of all, it must be your own effort. And you must study your negative emotions and classify them. So we do that in Shiva process. We make a statement. What we do in Shiva process is to separate the emotion from the story. The emotions are always based on a story we tell ourselves. And so instead of thinking of it, I'm angry because this and this did that to me, we instead, by making the A statement, we just say, there's anger here. It's an existential condition, angry. You know that existential condition? You ever been angry? You ever been scared? You know that condition. Every human being knows these conditions. And so the story we tell about it is a trap. The story is Maya. The story is the great illusion. Because we take the story realistically, but what's really going on existentially is the feeling of it. The feeling of anger or the feeling of sorrow. So in Shiva process, we begin with that feeling. Then we can work with it. He says, you must find which negative emotions you chiefly have. Mainly three classes. People who have a lot of anger, people who have a lot of fear, and people who have a lot of depression or despair. Those are three types. Then you have to see what brings them up. What brings up these things? What causes, whatever your characteristic is, what causes fear to come up? What causes your anger to come up? What causes your despair to come up? You must understand that your only control over emotions is by your understanding. But this is not immediate. If you contemplate correctly for 6 months, that will affect negative emotions. If you begin to think rightly today, it will not change your negative emotions tomorrow. He's saying you must think from the work. That's the way Gurdjieff talked about it. Think from the work. Think from the teachings. You must. Baba would say, every time he gave a course, he would give the course introduction and the finale, and he would always say one thing. He would say, imbibe this course. Imbibe this course. And what he meant by was, take the understandings of this course. What are the understandings of this course? You are the self. You are divine. You're not your ego, you're not your body. You are divine consciousness. That's the highest understanding. And all those related understandings, imbibe it so it becomes so much part of you that whenever it happens, that teaching is with you. It's not something you read and then you forget in your life. It's there when you meet a person you don't like. It's there when somebody says something bad about you. It's there when somebody puts you down. It's there when you have a failure in life. And it's there when you have a success in life. It's always there. So soak yourself in it. Somebody recently wrote me something about marinating in something. I said, that's a great word. Marinate in the teachings. Let yourself soak in them so they become part of you. And he says, one of the methods of controlling emotions is through the intellectual center. That is by contemplating the teachings. Attitudes must be created not at the moment of emotional explosion, but long beforehand. Then little by little, emotional explosions will come under the control of the intellect. Thoughts can be more permanent than feelings, and in that way, thoughts can influence feelings. It means understand the teachings. Imbibe the teachings and use that understanding. Make it operational in your life. A certain discipline must be introduced into our emotions, and a certain knowledge must be acquired in order to work on the emotional mind. And I wanted to finish with one of my favorite question answers with Baba. I may have shared this recently, but I like it so much I should read it every 3 months. Because I remember when he did this. It was in 1972, and he answered the question of one of the ashram women who asked about anger. And there were things in his answer that I still remember, that they just gave me, and he sounds like a Gurdjieffian. I don't think Baba ever studied Gurdjieff, but... Okay, so question from Kalyani, one of the women, American women in the ashram. What should we do with feelings of anger that rise up from within for no apparent reason, and yet seem to demand a target for expression? Isn't that a perfect question to the context? Baba, when a strong feeling of anger arises, begin to talk to that feeling. You big fool, who could be more stupid than you? Don't let it express itself on an outer level. Tackle it within yourself. This is Baba's unique expression of the same truth. Talk to it. Be angry at your anger, as Baba would say. Let your anger become its own victim instead of making someone else its target. If your anger falls on an innocent person, you're being unfair to him. But if it turns on itself, then it is reaping the fruits of its own karma, which is quite fair. Instead of afflicting others, it should afflict itself. That would be the best way of teaching a lesson to your anger. Irrational anger is due to some impurity. and a seeker should not be subject to such fits. If there's a certain reason to make you angry, it can be understood. But if anger arises within for no reason, it obviously shows that your heart is tainted. The Lord says in the Gita that anger destroys discrimination. This is what I remember, this part. Anger is self-destructive. It will not depart, leaving you feeling blessed and happy, nor will it help you live a longer life. It erupts only to vitiate your mind, to destroy your capacity for reason, and to swallow your joy and bliss. Then it departs. The same could be said for fear and depression, too. These just vitiate our minds. They don't have any good to them. It is anger which is the cause of all the different kinds of mental imbalances and degrees of lunacy, neurosis or psychosis, whether it be fits of neurosis lasting for a week, a fortnight, or a month, or whether it makes one 25%, 50%, or 75% crazy. In all these cases, the imbalance arises from anger. Anger is a terrible fire which burns up the capacity of right reason. You will find that all the insomniacs and people who become slaves to drugs are people who are particularly great friends to anger. You know, everyone gets angry. Everyone gets angry. But it's right, there's no disgrace in being angry. But I think the crucial moment is when that arises, then to follow what Gurdjieff said, which is not to express it, not to dump it on someone else, but to examine and say, what do I want to do with this anger? Be much better to burn it to sameness, to understand it, and then to neutralize it. He says, there are many boys and girls who come here and tell me they don't feel like studying, and they ask me what to do. I ask them if they flare up, often even on small pretexts, and the answer is almost always yes. Then I tell them it is their anger which is destroying their capacity for absorbing anything. Therefore, discard your anger, because anger is one's worst enemy. This is Baba talking. So what's the net result of all that, Devi Ma?
Don't express anger.
Don't express any negative emotions. It's all right if they come up, but exercise some discipline. It'll strengthen you. It strengthens us. To indulge them, to whinge, to say, oh, poor me. What do you think it does to you to go always going on? You know, we could all write a script about our life, poor me, couldn't we? Don't you? Some of you might be expert at doing that. You know, feel sorry for yourself, poor me. This is not anger, this is self-pity. This is depression. And just go on, poor me, look at how bad my life is. Do you realize what a bad life I had? What bad circumstances I had. Never got a break. Poor me. And every time you express that, it weakens you. It weakens you. And angry. Everything's frustrating. Everybody's screwed up. They're horrible people. They're disgusting. And you keep expressing that, that weakens you also. And fear. If you say, oh, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. This could happen and that could happen. Now with the virus, we've got fabulous possibilities of terror and fear. Everything, every doorknob is the enemy and is inflict something on us. Every person, everybody's breath. What?
Every package.
Every package is filled with viruses and everywhere. It's everywhere and it's coming and coming, and every cough and every sneeze filling the universe. And it makes us weaker and weaker. So we have to live with strength and with faith, and we have to fight against these tendencies. So let's meditate. And one of the things that you can do out there in Radio Land is you can download the tracks from on the podcast, the Happy for No Good Reason tracks, and that has four tracks on it. But the first three are very significant. The first two are Shiva Process. And you're interested in Shiva Process, you may never have done it. play the first two tracks from the Happy and For No Good Reason podcast every day. Once a day, takes about 20 minutes. Just listen to it and follow its prompts, and you will learn Shiva process automatically if you do that. And then the other track that's significant is the mantra track, the japa track. We can play that now. Yeah, and I repeat the mantra, Om Namah Shivaya, and you can just listen to it. You can repeat it with me. And we'll do that now for 5 minutes, and then we'll meditate for another 5 minutes after that. So once again, with great respect and love, I welcome you with all my heart. Satgurunath Maharaj Ki Jai. Let's meditate now. We'll meditate for 10 minutes in all.